your neighbors, and welcome to the Blind Handyman Show. This being show number 56 on October 21st, 2003, recorded at a little ranch house right here on Southwood Drive in Lufkin, Texas. For the next hour, we're going to talk about building, repairing, and maintaining, all designed, of course, with the blind in mind. Here are the hosts for the Blind Handyman, Don Shaw.
Yeah, Mr. Tom. What's the good word, man?
Oh, Dr. Pepper, I guess, Donald. I'm not sure. Don Patterson, hi there.
Yes, sir. Enjoying these good fall days. One's a carbon copy of the other one.
Yes.
Beautiful weather.
Just marvelous, I guarantee you. My
marvelous.
Name's Tom Houston. And ladies and gentlemen, back this week. And boy, we're glad. The creator and producer of the Blind Handyman Show, ladies and gentlemen. Here he is, Phil Parr!
Did y'all even wish me a happy birthday while I was gone? Say anything?
Well, as a matter of fact,
we remember his birthday.
I turned 63 while I was out in California. And it wasn't much to it. It wasn't just like being 62.
It really wasn't worth the wait.
It didn't make any difference. Well, it wasn't worth the wait, and I hadn't gotten my presents yet. I ordered a bookport from APH. And
that bookport has not come in
yet?
It
has not come yet. I guess I need to call him and see. See what
that thing kicked back
on. Yeah, it did.
I thought it just was landing.
What a deal.
Well, anyway, y'all did a little show last week without me. I understand there were some problems.
Gigantic problems.
Yeah, but we had a mystery phone caller straighten us out.
Did you?
Called us from San Francisco.
Called us from San Francisco. Where was I Tuesday? I guess I was in Seattle by then. We were in Seattle. We went up to the Northwest. It was a good trip. We kind of misplanned. We moved too much at the last, like, you know, we only stayed one night in each, so we were moving every day, and that gets old.
The way these hotels do it, what you have to check out by 11 or noon, but you can't check in till 3, so you really can't even get a room for 24 hours.
That's about the way it was. We got to, and the train, Amtrak, and we know this, Amtrak is always, this train was supposed to be in Seattle at 8 o'clock, and it got there at 1.
Whoa.
And this is in the morning, so, of course, being the technology people that we are, Luann just got out the laptop and watched a movie. You know, which I thought was cool, and I had a book I read. Let me recommend Al Franken's book. You can get it from Audible, and I don't know if APH has got it yet or not. It's called Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them. It's one of the best books I have ever read, and I highly recommend it. I may have to give away copies.
Written, of course, from the Democrat perspective.
It was written. It's written from the perspective of a liberal, which is a great word. Liberal. I, Phil Parr, am a liberal and damn proud of it.
Uh-huh.
I'm tired of them not using the word liberal.
But he supports that conservative Republican Wes Clark.
He is Phil, say what you mean, man.
He is a conservative Democrat, and I hope you think he's a Republican. I hope you'll vote for him.
We've been working on him. We're going to get him out of his shell before it's over with.
He's difficult to pin down on an issue.
But you didn't have much last week. You didn't have any of that kind of stuff last week, did you?
No, we didn't. We talked to the chair over there.
Talked to the who? To the chair.
To the chair.
Anyway, being 63 is no great shakes. It wasn't any big deal. So what else is going on? Weather's pretty.
Oh,
nice fall.
Beautiful weather.
Oh, great days.
Just marvelous weather.
And about a week of it.
Fantastic.
Yeah. They're making giant progress on my house out there. Because
they are. Okay. Tell us about that. What are they all
got? Well,
we've
got it all. Got the decking and the tar paper on the roof and all of the siding, you know, that goes behind the brick. No insulation yet.
Yeah.
But slab, I guess the three, the plumber comes to do his inside work, vent through the roof, set the tubs, then the electrician comes, and then the air conditioner guy comes to do his duct work.
Yeah.
And then, I guess, shingles and windows and dry in completely, I guess.
And that's it? So you actually might actually be in it by Christmas, you think?
Oh, no. He allowed April the 1st just to keep out of trouble, but I tell Emily, I think
it'll
March the
1st,
she's shooting for February the 1st.
I think she's probably closer to right.
She's right.
Because, you know, once it's dried in, especially if we had some inclement weather in November because where they couldn't do any outside work, they'll be happy to come in and build your cabinets, boy.
Yeah. Well, I've seen them.
You know.
We have some people down the street from us that are building, and we've gotten acquainted with them.
Yeah.
And we went in their house last week, and it wasn't sheetrocked. It was ready to sheetrock. We went in it 2 days later, and it was 90% sheetrock.
Yeah. Whoa.
I mean, taped and floated. I mean, it was...
Let's get so on with it.
You saw that guy did my bathroom. He did in about 45 minutes. I
well,
mean, what,
and
you know.
your building here, your radio room here, and it's, what, 1,600 square feet? And they roofed it in a day. I mean,
less than a day. The guy was out of here by 2 o'clock.
Yeah, that's amazing, guy, too.
This one guy was carrying... I don't know if you've ever carried a bundle of shingles. This one guy was walking up the ladder with a bundle of shingles. So they left a bundle, and Shaw and I decided we were going to move it, and it took both of us to pick that sucker up. And this guy was walking, tucking it under his arm, and walking up the ladder and going, oh, man, there's no problem walking up this ladder with these. You know.
Yeah.
They were probably drinking cold cerveza at 2:30.
They were drinking my cold cerveza at 2:30. Anyway, it won't be long till you'll be in the house. I guess we'll have to do... We'll have to do some sort
of... We'll have to do a remote or something.
Remote from your room. How do you like your new microphone? Boy, doesn't he sound good on his new
microphone. Oh, the best I've ever
heard. Best I've ever heard.
It's kind of goodness, small. Gracious. I have to make sure I...
You hit it. Well, you hit it.
Brian gets everything he wants.
Boy, if we had the old Sony mini disc recorder, we could do a remote from the living room. Boy, I'm talking about an echo effect.
I think we can do it with the
living room.
With the book port, if I ever get it.
You know, that's a thought.
Think you can be done with
Bookport. Whoa, that's a good idea.
Because Bookport records on a flash card. I think it'll do so many hours on a flash card. So I think we could do that if I ever get it. Just, you know, you folks.
Boy, now we could do that.
Maria Delgado at APH. I need to call her and do a blind like me with her. So the story show ran with all the guys. I think everybody loved it, the story. We had all the little stories.
Yeah, the blind story, blind like me, seems to have done well.
That was on what? That was on this past Friday, right?
It was on this past Friday.
It was. Show number 13.
I think we are going to maybe make that a regular, maybe not a monthly feature, but a regular feature. Do we have email, Tommy?
Yes, sir. We do indeed. Hi, everyone. Last November, my husband and I authorized Century 21 to remodel our bathroom. It was a mess before this because it had a mold problem. So we had an electrician install a ceiling fan, and we had Century 21 put in an acrylic surround system. It changed our old bathtub from pink to white acrylic, and the walls and ceiling in the tub area are all this white acrylic. We added a new sink, vanity, and toilet, but the walls and ceiling in this area are just painted a light beige. For a while, the bathroom looked quite nice. However, the mold has been ever so slowly returning. First, it started in the grout of the block window. Then it attacked the caulking between the top of the tub and the acrylic wall. Now it's on the acrylic wall underneath the four acrylic corner shelves. Now Century 21 put one of those green sheet walls behind the acrylic wall supporting the plumbing fixtures, so it cannot be a leak from there. We all shower with the ceiling fan turned on. Some of us dry out the tub and the walls when we have finished our shower. Some of us do now.
That's right.
I wonder if that's a housewife writing.
You did a housewife or a husband. Some of us don't
this
bother.
This is a female, yes.
Obviously, hubby deer doesn't.
Hubby is not.
Okay. Here's her problem. They told us not to use anything abrasive on this acrylic. So I've been using vinegar and or Windex.
Yeah.
So that doesn't even touch the mold. I want to wash it down with a solution of a half cup bleach to 1 gallon of water, but I'm afraid that may harm the acrylic.
Man.
Do any of you handy persons have any helpful suggestions? That's from Kathy Luters.
I have no idea. Do you? Does anybody have any idea?
Well, I know that they make, I think when they're talking about abrasives, though, I believe they're talking about the powdered Ajax, and I mean that would be what I would take as an abrasive, and I think they make some real powerful you know, it's like Top Job or some of your Formula 409 and all that,
Mr.
and I know
Clean.
But I guess, you know, I can't hardly imagine, and I guess she's talking about they put the green rock in there behind
that's
that
what
one
I think
tub
too.
That should have probably been put everywhere. Anywhere you have, you know, just direct contact with the water, I hope that's what they did. And then of course I'd say on your paint, you just need to really make sure it's painted with enamel as opposed to just latex, and that might help some because you can kind of wash that off. But I, other than that, I have no clue.
Man,
but I think
know.
You know, abrasive, I wouldn't be afraid to try my bleach a liquid bleach. I wouldn't. I think that what they're talking about is using Ajax or.
That's what I think.
You mean a very light mixture of water and.
I would try the Clorox. I'd get me a little Clorox and water, and give that a shot.
I think
the caulking, you know, can be taken out. Actually, you can go in there and remove the caulking and put new caulking, and that's probably going to be about as cheap as trying to clean the old. I'd be interested in starting out with new caulking maybe and just seeing how long it took to...
Well, I thought that's what they did.
Well, she did, but she said it's already turned mold, but I think she'll be better off replacing the caulking as opposed to trying to clean it.
But what is making, what is creating the mold?
Yeah, that's
well,
the
moisture
question.
Of some sort.
Some kind of moisture, or if it's a dark, if it doesn't have a window, when the light, if it's a dark room most of the time, I don't know.
You might check, we don't know where they're from. I don't know if they're having some serious temperature inversions. You know, if they're in cold weather in the bathroom. Some bathrooms, you know, don't really have heaters or an air conditioning vent. Some do, some don't.
That's
some
true.
Have the electric heater in conjunction with an exhaust fan or just an electric heater. Like my upstairs bathroom has both air conditioning and. But a lot of the newer houses, they don't put the air conditioning vent.
They sure don't.
In the bathroom. They just have an exhaust fan. So I'm not sure what the situation if you're getting but temperature can be a problem. You need to keep it with the kind of the temperature of the rest of the house.
But I wonder if if anyone else around is having that sort of problem. But
that would be
the question to ask, wouldn't it?
Mold is a stuff that it grows, and I don't know anything. I know
it's
nothing.
It's hard to get rid of. I've always heard that.
It would self-multiply, so if they didn't get rid of it, then it could come back, couldn't it, regrow on its own?
Yeah, it's a fungus, fungi.
Yeah,
But I'm not sure I wonder if we're talking about what I call mildew is mold, you know.
I don't know. Yeah. Are the things the insurance companies are complaining so much?
I would not be afraid to try my little concoction of
light
bleach
Clorox
and water. Yeah,
I think probably so. But did Century 21 tell you? What I'm saying is, if you decide to sue Century 21, my wife's number is 634.
Or let them return the favor for you. Why don't you just let them sell it?
Yeah. My wife is an attorney, and she'd be happy to. Only kidding. We used to own a Century 21 franchise. It's a franchise deal that you buy. John owned it at one time. But if you decide to sue him, give me a call. I don't know anything about mold, but surely somebody. Did this come off the list?
Yes.
Did anybody answer it?
Well, I think she got a couple of little bites on it, but it was mostly bleach, probably
the
watered
same thing,
down Pat's bleach.
Head, yeah, watered down bleach, I bet. Uh-huh. I'd try it. I agree with him.
Okay, hi, gang. I'm interested in purchasing an electric heater for my garage.
Yep.
I have a 24 by 22 garage. Yep. I haven't had the time to insulate it yet, but need the heat anyway. I'm also on a cost restriction, as my wife would go through the roof if I spent too much heating the garage. Sears.com has an all-metal milk house heater that it says is for outdoors. Any insight would be helpful. Thanks, Jeff.
It's not insulated?
That's what he says.
Jeff, my boy?
Not yet.
You're going to have a problem. You know, but wonder where, another thing, wonder where his hot water heater is and what kind it is. My hot water heater is gas. My garage is insulated. And when I had my woodwork tools in the garage, I thought one day it was cold, and I thought, I'll work out there. I'll just put the door down and plug this electric heater up. Then I got to thinking, well, damn, this gas hot water heater's in this garage, and me closed up with an electric heater going, so I didn't do it. And maybe that's unfounded fear, but if it's not insulated, you're going to have a terrible time.
Mighty bills.
If I was going to do that, I'd buy a wood stove and put it over in the corner and vent it out.
Well, I'm going to be faced with the same problem. We had an extra.
Yours would be insulated.
Yeah, I was going to say sheetrocked and insulated garage, but for safety, I guess I assume a garage, you may have gasoline powered things in there from time to time, lawnmowers, whatever.
Yeah.
They make an oil type electric heater. That has oil in it, and the heater heats the electric thing heats up the oil.
And it circulates through like a radiator.
It through like a radiator. Now, and I think it's kind of the safest as far as being around stuff. And I assume you're just talking about a heater to kind of warm you individually. I don't think you're going to get anything that, unless it be humongous, that would heat that whole garage. So maybe
but
you
with
just
it not insulated, boy. It's going to be a
yeah. I was just thinking maybe he wants something if he was working out there. Yeah. If he could put it close.
I wonder if the walls are open. Because if they're open, insulation is dirt filthy cheap.
Oh yeah.
I mean, insulation is cheap, and if you bought insulation, you'd have a good reason to buy a compressor and a tacker to put it up with. But even if you had to put it up with a hammer or a little electric nail gun like Don Shaw's got, insulation is cheap. I meant to mention the fact while ago, when they're insulating, you need to tell them to insulate every wall in your house, the inside walls too. It's cheap. It's the cheapest thing you can do. And then, you know, if somebody's in the bedroom making noise or in, you know, you know, she does have grandkids. You got to remember that, Grandpa. Pawpaw. She does have grandchildren. Well, I hear that bumper music in the background.
Right.
We have a guest today, Donald Shaw?
We do have a guest today that lives in Phoenix, Arizona. So, we will...
You didn't read the email about Pat saying, talking about the transit system, did you?
We didn't catch the email today about the transit system.
About Don Shaw and the transit system. Don Patterson and the transit system.
We need to catch that one, too. Next week, we'll have those emails.
We'll talk about the drill doctor. And we're going to have a guest in just a few minutes from Phoenix, Arizona, that's going to talk about building houses. Back in just a minute. More of the Blind Handyman. Hang on.
Blind Handyman. Blind Handyman. All lowercase, one word at hotmail.com. That's Blind Handyman at hotmail.com. Contact information. Blind like me. Blind like me. Lowercase, all one word at txucom.net. That's Blind like me at txucom.net. Contact information. Blind Handyman listserv. Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com. That's Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com. Contact information. Blind Handyman at hotmail.com. Blind like me at txucom.net. Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com. Email us often and give us your opinion. If you'd like to be a guest on one of our shows, give us your contact information.
Hi, everybody. This is Phil Parr. We're enjoying putting these little programs together for you. We hope you're enjoying them, too. We've been on with the Blind Handyman for more than a year now. We've done 10 Blind Like Me shows. We're having one little problem. You can help us with it. We always need guests for both shows, and we sometimes have a problem finding them. If you'd like to be a guest on either show, or you know someone who might make a good interview, email us at one of the following addresses. Blind Handyman, all one word, at hotmail.com, or Blind Like Me, all one word, at txucom.net. Also, if you have ideas for future shows, include them in your email. We look forward to hearing from you. And please tell your friends about the shows. Thanks again from all of us at the Blind Handyman and Blind Like Me.
Is the Blind Handyman. Be sure and tell a friend about the program and email us often, blindhandyman@hotmail.com. Now, here is more of the show with Don Shaw.
All right, we are back and for...
We are, aren't we?
We are. We're really back.
It's good to be back, I'll tell you that.
We are back.
We are, definitely. Our guest today lives in a little town called, well, I don't know how little, Phoenix, Arizona. Kevin Chin, how are you doing today, Kevin?
I'm doing great.
All right.
I wouldn't call Phoenix a little town.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe not so little, but
yeah, it's a pretty big town, and it's pretty hot today too. What? It's 103 degrees. Going to be 103 today.
My goodness gracious!
Whoa!
I'm glad I'm not there.
Kevin, is there more than a million people there yet?
Yeah, you know, Phoenix has a million people, and the surrounding, the metro area has 2 million.
Yeah,
total.
Yeah. So
it's
good size.
It's actually a pretty good sized town.
Yeah, it's like the seventh largest city in the United States.
Is that right? I didn't realize that. I didn't realize it was that big.
No kidding.
It's in the middle of the desert.
Yeah, and it's 100 and what?
Today, you know, this is, you know, the latest time. Actually, we're breaking records here now.
Wow.
The last couple days, it's actually been a high of 103 degrees.
I remember being in Laughlin, Nevada, which is not that far from you, in October, late October, and it was 105, 100, you know, I couldn't believe, wind blowing 70 miles an hour.
Wow.
I mean, we're all going stir crazy here from the heat.
And they all talk about, well, that's dry heat, so it's not as bad. Bull.
Well, you know what?
Bull.
I hate to disagree with you, but it's a dry heat, and it is better than a humid heat.
Well, probably some better, but it was awful hot in Las Vegas, and I was there in August one time.
Yeah, it's hot. It's, yeah. You know what it's like. If you want to take and turn your oven up to, you know, like 115 or 120, and then just stick your head in there, that's the way it is.
Well, maybe not today. Maybe we'll pass on that.
I was just telling Emily that the other day.
Why don't you stick your head in 120?
We have all electric ovens here.
Yeah. You don't want to let her hear this show, down there. And how long have you been without sight?
You know, I started going blind when I was 28, and I've been blind since right around 1988.
Yeah,
started going blind, and I was right around 30 years old. Mm. So it's been, you know, before that, actually here in Arizona, when I could see before, and they gave out, like, you know, 15-year driver's licenses.
Yeah.
So my driver's license just expired, and I'm total.
Wow. Oh, you're total now.
But your insurance guy loves you.
Yeah. Well, you know what?
Yeah.
I was my insurance guy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I owned it. I just sold an insurance agency. I had we had a partner, and there was two of us. We owned an Allstate insurance agency here in Phoenix. For 10 years, we had it. So I was my own insurance agent.
Yeah. Now, was this before or after you lost your eyesight?
Was after I lost my eyesight.
So you were an insurance salesman after you lost your eyesight?
Right, exactly.
That's very interesting, because you think of insurance salesmen doing a lot of eye contact with the person and looking sincere. So that would be an interesting... We might do a whole other show on that someday. But
no, you learn to look at people. You know, that's one of the things with good sales, is you have to, you know, be able to look at them. And you know, the a lot of people said, "Oh, I didn't even know you were blind."
Yeah.
You know, and actually, my partner Tim, and he's at law school now. I think we had our midlife crisis at the same time, so he sold the agency. But, you know, we would have clients come in, and he'd get clients, I'd get clients, and sometimes, you know, if the clients went to his desk to write policies, you know, they'd be talking, and they'd whisper over to him and say, "Hey, you know, is that gentleman, you know, visually impaired or blind?" And he'd go real loud. He goes, "Yeah, he's blind, but he's not deaf." So I was like, you know, so we had fun with it.
I love it. You might as well have fun with it. Nothing you can do about it, is there?
Exactly.
Might as well have a good time. But now... What did you do before you lost your eyesight?
Well, right before I lost my eyesight, I was a printer, and before that, I had a construction business where I raised houses. So I've done a few things in my life.
As in, tore them down?
Well, actually, the definition of house raising in the dictionary, I think, is where a group of people gets together and builds a house for somebody. But what we did is, it was more raising and leveling, where we'd actually lift the whole house up in the air.
Yeah.
Or level floors, and we'd move houses, too.
Mm-hmm.
It was a family-owned business. My father started this business after World War II in the Chicagoland area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I was born and raised. And then I worked at, since I was 13, and then when I got out of high school, I worked and then became a partner in it when my father retired. And then things changed, and I moved out of there into Phoenix and became a printer then. But
so
for many years, I raised houses.
You have done some building, you've done some leveling, you've done a little bit of everything when it comes to
right.
the house.
Yeah, it's, you know, there we have, you know, like a lot of businesses would call us because their floors were unlevel,
uh-huh.
you know, so we'd level them up, especially bars and taverns
uh-huh.
would call us. Their floors are unlevel and they need it for the pool table, and we do that. Or, you know, we would raise houses totally for four-foot foundations or for basements.
Yeah, to raise a house and dig a basement under the house and then set the house back down?
Correct.
Yeah, we were kind of talking about that last week. How would you raise a house high enough to get a bulldozer under it? Man, you'd have to. That's some raising, you know.
Well, the what would happen is, and we were kind of different. This was in the 1970s and early 80s when I did this.
Uh-huh.
So it was a while ago, but that was in the time we used all wood. You know, we had wooden timbers and we had what we called cribbing blocks, which was similar to railroad ties, which was 6-inch by 6-inch, about 4 feet tall,
uh-huh.
and 8-inch by 8-inch, which
yeah.
was about 4 feet tall. And they were light wood, and we had some oak, which we didn't really want to use because it was too heavy. But
yeah.
you'd get up, you'd get to a house, and you'd have to crawl under the house and figure out the way the floor joists were going, because a lot of houses had additions, and the floor joists went every which way.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you look at the outside of the house and the plates, and that's actually where I sent you the email, because you were talking about the plate and the
yeah.
grouping of the plate. Because we lifted houses and had to, you know, lift them like an inch, and then, you know, because they're all bolted down. So we just cut the bolt off with a hacksaw then, and then the house would just pop up a little bit more.
Yeah.
And we're done. But we'd look at the floor joists, and we'd have to figure out how we would run timbers under the house with the floor joists. You know, and the floor joists could all go one way. That was the best way it happened.
Yeah, so that you could support the whole house without
Correct.
Part of it lopping off to one side.
Right.
Yeah.
But if they built additions, the floor joists might actually go two different ways.
Yeah.
Then you'd have to figure out how to put, you know, timbers in there and, you know, catch the addition that was on there to raise the whole house.
Uh-huh.
And then you'd get under there, and some houses you'd have 4 foot of room under, and some houses you'd have no room under. So you might have to dig, you know, ditches or, you know, through underneath the house.
To actually get up under there.
To get up under there. Or you might just lift the house from the outside if the house was strong enough until you could fit things under there.
And God knows what you'd find under there.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I mean, we worked on one house, I remember, and this is in Illinois, and garter snakes. There's garter snakes in Illinois.
Yeah.
We lifted this house up, and everything was fine the day we lifted up. And we probably had the house up 3 feet in the air, because it already started with on some type of piers.
Uh-huh.
So it was probably a foot and a half up anyway. So the house was probably 3 feet in the air. You had to crawl underneath the house, you know, on your hands and knees to get to where you had to go to lift the house up. And the next morning we got there, and there was hundreds, if not thousands, of garter snakes underneath this house.
Whoa.
And, you know, we cut the plumbing, so the plumbing was like a foot, you know, the two pipes, you know, raised up a foot apart from each other.
Uh-huh.
So there were snakes crawling up the plumbing trying to get up into the house, and it was totally ridiculous. And there were snakes all the way from 6 inches to the biggest garter snakes I've ever seen in my life.
Wow. But you didn't see these the first day.
Not the first day, no. We saw a few snakes, but not like this.
Wonder where they were.
I don't know. And the lady said that she's always had problems with snakes. I remember that. That was one of the most vivid things I ever done, because you're crawling all around these garter snakes and kicking them out of the way to get under there so
yeah.
you can raise a house.
Now, garter snake, it won't hurt you.
It didn't bite you. Even if it nipped you or something, it wouldn't hurt.
It would have been, I mean, they aren't poisonous.
No, they're not poisonous.
So they were
just garden snakes.
They were just in the way.
They were in the way, and they were kind of, you know, kind of like, was weird having to crawl around these things.
Yeah, that'd be creepy under a dark house and got snakes surrounding you. And
none of
man,
I couldn't do it. That'd be it for me. I'd be, you know, I'd have to find something else to do.
And I remember one time, too, my brother and I were in the business together. And he, you know, I was a skinny little guy.
Uh-huh.
You know, I weighed about 140 pounds, so I would be the one that would always have to go under the houses when they were, you know,
really low.
The house, there
yeah.
was no room under the house. You almost have to crawl between the floor joists on certain houses.
Yeah.
But I remember my brother one time, he was the one that went under the house, and he yells at me for a shim, which we had shims to, you know, shim up the parts where we were raising, which was anything from a wooden shingle to a 4x4 block.
Yeah.
And I crawl up, and you got to crawl up, like, between their legs because, you know, they hand it to them.
Yeah.
And you got a flashlight because it's, like, just pitch black under there.
Mm-hmm.
And I crawl up, and I'm crawling up his feet, then I see his knees, and then all of a sudden there's this, like, right on his crotch, there's this biggest rat you ever wanted to see. And it's like, okay, I got a 4x4 block in my hand, so I whack him with it. But I should have whacked him with it. You know, but I didn't.
So this rat was sitting on your brother's butt.
He was actually, my brother was on his back, so and the rat wasn't on him, but it was like right up tight against his, right in his crotch.
This rat was not afraid.
The rat wasn't afraid. When I got up right there, it jumped over his leg and ran away.
Yeah.
But those, you know, we had rats and moles and mice and snakes and cats and
But this was, this rat's home, and you were invading it, and he wasn't too afraid of you.
He wasn't too happy. And, that, you know, that was like one of the first rats I've ever seen in my life. And it's like, oh, God, let me get that thing.
But you didn't whack him with the block.
Well, I didn't whack my brother with the block.
No, I'm
So, Kevin, I wonder what's probably the biggest house y'all ever moved and how far, roughly?
You know, the houses... We raised single, you know, the most we did, I think, was we got into subdivisions that houses, they were ranch houses that were built on 4-foot foundations. And that was sweet because you could get in there, you had 4 feet of room, you could, you know, put timbers in, lift the house up in like a day and a half or 2 days. And you'd only lift the house up like 4.5 feet, and they would put the knee walls up on top of the 4-foot foundation, and then they would, you know, pour the cement, and we let the house down, and, you know, well, we let the house down before they poured the cement, but you let it back down, so you actually had a basement then, and it was built with knee walls. You know, you had a 4-foot foundation, and you'd build up, you know, 6-foot knee walls or 5-foot knee walls so that you had enough room for a basement.
Uh-huh.
It worked out real well that way, and those were the best, but the biggest house we raised, you know, was probably, you know, I don't know, 2,200, 2,500 square feet.
Yeah.
You know, and, that, and it's not really hard. You just, it's not one timber sometimes. Sometimes you have to put, you know, two timbers together, like two 24-foot timbers or 32-foot timbers together and raise them that way. And you use what's called cribs, and these were those railroad ties. And you take and make them into little squares. As you lifted the house up, and we used hydraulic jacks. We used 8-ton and 10-ton jacks that you'd buy for your car at Sears. Most of the jacks we used were Sears, from Sears.
Oh, really?
The regular hydraulic jacks, yeah. They had machines coming out at that time, and a lot of the house raisers were going to steel, you know, raising houses with steel, you know, I-beams.
Looks like that would be better.
Well, With a wooden timber, you don't have to be so, you know, right on with the centering of the jack on the timber. With a steel beam, you have to be definitely on that middle of that steel I-beam, or else, you know, you don't want anything to come flying out at you.
No,
you sure don't.
Well, then I guess we got to ask, because I listened to the Car Talk guys, and they were telling one time about dropping a car off the lift. Did you ever drop a house?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I dropped a house with a guy in it, too.
The guy was in it?
Guy was in it, and the only thing we broke was a bottle of Pepsi fell out of the refrigerator and broke. And what happened is we had a house, and the house was actually on the ground, and they wanted the house raised, and they were going to build a large addition. So, you know, we're going to start the house on such and such a date. So the date we get there, we go over there, and they had backhoed and dug the addition out, which was like a 10-foot hole, butt up against the house. So it's like, you know what, we don't want to raise this house because if something happens, you know, it's going to go in that hole and we're going to lose the house. Because it's possible because the ground breaks away.
Yeah.
So we're like, you know, we were greedy anyway, so we did the house anyway. And we started raising the house, and that exact thing happened. It didn't fall in the hole. It just, you know, fell off. The ground broke away on that one side of the house.
And it dropped down.
And it slid probably about 4 inches when it fell down. And it only fell down like maybe 3 inches. But it slid 4 inches. So the house actually moved, and then we had to, you know, go in there because we didn't really want to, we didn't like digging, you know, trenches to get the beams through.
Yeah.
So then we had to definitely dig trenches, which took days and days and days.
And of course, that jerked all the plumbing loose when the house moved.
It did, you know, it didn't do too bad a job on the plumbing. You know, a lot of times there's a lot of give on that. You'd be surprised at how much give you have. The septic, you know, the cast iron piping, that was another story.
But
the actual piping under the house, there was, you know, that had enough give on it to go. So, and, you know, and talking about that, we used to, when we'd raise the house, you know, we'd raise the house up, you know, 4 inches, 6 inches, 5 feet, you know, and you'd all this plumbing, you'd have to break. You know, the septic or the sewer line, which is cast iron, you'd break.
Cut or break or whatever.
Well, we'd break it with either a sledgehammer or a heavy mallet. You know, and they weren't that difficult to break.
Yeah.
And then the water lines we would cut with a hacksaw.
Uh-huh.
And everything would be shut off, and you'd raise the house. So you raise the house, and then the family, most of the times the family lived in the house while we were raising it.
Really?
So, you know, oh, yeah. So you take a big inner tube and, you know, tie it onto the sewer line going from the house down to the, you know, the ground.
So they could go ahead and use it.
And then you just buy extension for the water, and you put that up, you know, PVC pipe, just so it didn't leak so bad that, you know, all the water went around. You'd get wet, but
yeah,
that really was.
But so they'd have water in the house, and they'd be able to use the sewer.
Right.
Okay.
And sometimes when the people would actually use the bathroom, whoever had to tie up the sewer line,
uh-huh,
sometimes didn't do a good job, so you come back in the morning with a lot of surprises.
Yeah, you could have a big mess under the house, couldn't you?
You got that right. And I remember one time we actually, because he had to take the inner tube off, and the people would live in the house while we were digging under the house. We've had people in, you know, in the house while the bulldozer was under the house. Okay.
Wow.
So the gentleman we used him a lot was, he had a Case 450 front end loader.
Uh-huh.
And that's what we used. It was a nice sized little bulldozer, you know. So I remember one time he was underneath digging under the house, and they let loose right on top of him. So he wasn't too happy
again. What a deal.
I guess you're glad that you're not having to do all that anymore.
Well, yeah. That was a lot of work.
My dad
worked until he was 65.
Really?
Yeah, so that was his life.
And this was his company?
This was his, yeah. It was called Lester Chin, and then when we got involved, it was Lester Chin and Sons, and we kept that name.
What a job, though.
What do you do now? Are you gainfully employed now? Or?
Well, you know, I just sold the insurance agency within the last year.
Yeah.
My partner and I did. And I'm going to school because I'm interested in getting certified as a paralegal.
Uh-huh.
To see if that'll work out, and I'm still doing some insurance. You know, you can't really walk away from it.
Yeah.
Because I had like 1,700 clients. Well, a lot of them still know who I am and, you know, contact me.
Yeah. So you folks had a lucrative business.
Yeah, we had a very nice agency. Actually, our agency was, we had the agency for right about 10 years. When we sold it, the average agency that had as many clients as we had was a 17-year agency. So we did pretty good.
Well, you know, selling insurance couldn't be the worst thing that a blind person could do.
I wouldn't think so.
There's another gentleman in Phoenix, and he's a blind gentleman, and he has his own insurance agency, too. He's brokering insurance. We were what's called captive agents. We worked for one insurance company.
Yeah, and so he broker. He looks around for the best deal for people or whatever. Exactly.
You and I went to school with a guy that had Charles Wiseman, and his dad had a
I didn't realize
yeah,
that.
It was interesting. You deal with, you know, dealing with the public.
That would be the only problem, would be dealing with the public.
Yeah, that's fun.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
But you're going to become a paralegal rather than a legal secretary.
Right. And I do a lot of advocacy efforts. I'm the Arizona Council of the Blind's president right now.
Uh-huh.
And I'm also the Western Region advocate for Guide Dog Users Incorporated.
Really?
Which we split the country into two sections, Eastern and Western, and split it in half and go west, and that's what I handle for access issues with guide dogs.
And you're the Western guy, right?
Right, exactly.
So you involved in this deal? Is it in Iowa where they wouldn't let the girl in to the training school with her guide dog? I guess you've read about that.
GDUI is correct.
Yeah.
And that's who I... Yeah, I mean, GDUI is an advocacy organization.
Yeah.
So that's... Yeah, we're involved with that. Mm-hmm. And, I'm more the grassroots advocate. I deal with individuals on access issues.
Yeah.
You know, like they get denied access with a guide dog into taxi cabs or restaurants.
Yeah.
Things like that. So, but Iowa is one of the issues, that we are involved with that complaint.
They still haven't resolved that thing.
No, and that's an issue that's federal. You know, I mean, she filed a state and federal issue, and the federal wheels roll very slowly.
Yeah, so, I heard that.
So who knows where that, how long it's going to take.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. Do you ever listen to WLS radio?
WLS is in Chicago, and yeah, we used to listen to it all the time.
I would figure that would be your radio, since you said Chicagoland, because that's their expression. Everything on WLS is Chicagoland.
Well, are you flying your Chicago Cubs jersey at half mast?
Yeah,
the poor Cubs.
That was typical.
I figured you moved to Arizona so you could be with the winner there with your...
Well, they brought them to Arizona for spring training.
Yeah.
And that, one of the last mobility lessons that I had when I went to... the rehab center in Illinois and learned orientation and mobility was to the restaurant where the goat is from.
Oh, yeah.
It's underground Michigan Avenue, so you got to go down Michigan Avenue, which is a large, a main business thoroughfare in the center of Chicago. And then you have to find the little stairway that goes down underground where there's like a whole other city down there. And then it's called the Billy Goat Tavern. And that's the same, if you remember the old Saturday Night Live, where the guy was going, John Belushi was on that one, and he was going, cheeseburger, cheeseburger, Pepsi. That's where that is from.
Right.
So you walk in the place, and they start screaming at you the same thing that was on the Saturday Night Live thing, cheeseburger, and you got to, find your way through that whole mess of people yelling and screaming and things like that. So.
Well, they'll get them next year, right?
Yeah, they did, I heard Tom Brokaw say that the Cubs are real good at snatching defeat from the jaws of victory.
Yeah, they did. And I heard that Dusty Baker said to his players, he said, well, we just didn't have good timely pitching and hitting, but I questioned his managerial skills, too, that last game where he left the pitcher in too long.
Yeah, one of the more interesting things with the playoffs, the Cubs were... we were kind of sad about the Cubs. But one of the interesting things is, what is B.H. Kim, I think, was the pitcher for the one team. I can't remember the team now, but he was the pitcher for the Arizona Diamondbacks when they won the World Series.
Right.
Yeah.
So I was kind of laughing when they said, we're not going to have B.H. Kim in the World Series. I was going, yeah, good idea.
Well, my only experience in Chicago is the train stations, and this place I went in, and I walked in, and they said, find your own damn table, we're tired. What a deal.
I love Chicago. Chicago's great. Yeah. Train.
They were yelling at you, huh?
They were yelling at us.
There you go. They do a lot of yelling in Chicago.
That toddling town.
But it's a great city.
It is. It is. I'd like to spend more time there, and maybe I will get to some.
Right.
Listen, you've been a most interesting guest, and we hope you keep on keeping on and listening, and we appreciate you, and might do a blind like me and explore your life in a little further depth down in the future sometime.
I'd love to, and thanks for having me on.
Thank you, sir, and we'll be back with more of The Blind Handyman in just a minute.
The Blind Handyman. Blind Handyman, all lowercase, one word, at hotmail.com. That's Blind Handyman at hotmail.com. Contact information. Blind like me. Blind like me, lowercase, all one word, at txucom.net. That's Blind like me at txucom.net. Contact information. Blind Handyman listserv. Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com. That's Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com. Contact information. Blind Handyman at hotmail.com. Blind like me at txucom.net. Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com. Email us often and give us your opinion. If you'd like to be a guest on one of our shows, give us your contact information. Hi, everybody. This is Phil Parr. We're enjoying putting these little programs together for you. We hope you're enjoying them, too. We've been on with the Blind Handyman for more than a year now. We've done 10 Blind Like Me shows. We're having one little problem. You can help us with it. We always need guests for both shows, and we sometimes have a problem finding them. If you'd like to be a guest on either show, or you know someone who might make a good interview, email us at one of the following addresses. Blind Handyman, all one word, at hotmail.com, or Blind Like Me, all one word, at txucom.net. Also, if you have ideas for future shows, include them in your email. We look forward to hearing from you. And please tell your friends about the shows. Thanks again from all of us at the Blind Handyman and Blind Like Me.
You are listening to the Blind Handyman, the talk of the blind community. Our email address is blindhandyman@hotmail.com. If you would like to be part of the show, leave us a phone number and we will contact you soon. Now, here's more of today's show with Phil Parr.
Thank you so much, Jack. And a couple little subjects I want to talk about. We got an email that we didn't get a chance to read today. I forgot it too late or what the deal was. A guy said that he had seen the drill doctor advertised on television and wanted to know if a blind person could use the drill doctor.
Yeah.
Said that it came with a film explaining how to use it. And I can understand why it would, because it's a tricky kind of a deal. And I've been kind of thinking all day how I would explain this. If y'all understand it, then I've done all right, because neither one of you have ever used it. Have you?
We haven't. I haven't.
I haven't seen it.
Well, it's just a little bitty thing. It has a very fast speed motor, about the speed of a Dremel tool. You've got it. We've all got it.
Yeah.
All got Dremel tools. It winds up. I mean, it cranks up.
Like a dentist drill.
Yeah, it
like
cranks
things
up hard. But let me first of all start by describing a drill bit is basically like a screw with great big threads on it. Think about it.
Yep. I agree with that.
It's like a screw that has one groove, and that one groove starts and it winds around and around the shaft.
Like a spiral.
Yeah, it spirals around the shaft. So it's like a screw with a big wide thread on it. And all you want to do really is sharpen the point of that. In other words, you want to sharpen the first, say, quarter inch of that drill bit or that big screw, because the rest of it's going to follow what the first of it did. So you don't need to sharpen the whole thing. That's the principle. The way mine works is this. You have a little set of jaws. First of all, let me clear my throat. First of all, you have a little shaft or a little fitting that you put that is probably 4 inches long that you put the drill bit down in. And you can tighten the drill bit up if you want to in this little shaft or this little fitting. Well, don't tighten it up. Then you stick the end of the drill bit that you want to sharpen, which would be the beginning of the threaded screw, the beginning of the thread, or the beginning of the screw, into a little set of jaws, and you turn it until those jaws have captured the flat side, until those jaws are locked on to the beginning of where the spiral starts.
Okay.
Are you with me?
Yep.
That the flat side against the side of these little clamps. Then you tighten this thing down on the drill bit, and it leaves about half an inch of the drill bit sticking out past this thing that you tightened it up in. Then you move it to the actual sharpening thing, turn the motor on, and start just turning this thing, and it sharpens just the very tip. In other words, you can hear it going around, click, click, click. You can hear each time the tip goes around, it sharpens it. And believe me, it works. Now, that's the way mine works. I'm not sure that's the way all drill doctors work, but that's the way mine works. And I got a book of instructions with mine. I think I had my brother-in-law read me the instructions. It is kind of a complicated deal. It sounds a lot more complicated than it is, because I went to mine this morning after I read this email, and because it had been a long time since I'd sharpened one. And it works very well, and it's very easy to do once you know the sequence of steps that you do. You put it in the sleeve, you lock it in these jaws with the flat side out, you turn it until you hear it click, and then you tighten this thing down, then you move it over and sharpen it. It sounds very complicated. It actually works very well, and I assume that's how the drill doctor works. Mine I bought at Lowe's.
But it may be a similar deal.
I'm sure it's a similar deal.
What would you say the danger factor is? Can you get hurt with it?
No.
Okay.
There's no way to get hurt with
it.
You can actually hear when the wheel is spinning, the sharpening wheel is spinning, you can actually hear, though, the wheel
you can
hitting
hear
against the tip
you
of
can
the
hear
drill
it sharpening your drill bit.
Well,
yes,
is
you
there
can.
A time limit, or does it stop automatically?
Yeah.
Or you
you just turn it. I guess you could sharpen it till you sharpen it away.
Okay.
You know, I just turn it two or three times, and then you take the drill bit out of its little sleeve, and you can feel where it's sharper down there on the end, on that little quarter inch on the end, than it is the rest of the way up. Because
No, go ahead. I didn't.
That shaft is going to follow what the rest of the drill bit. Now, so you don't need to sharpen the whole drill bit, but it is nothing like I thought it would be. I thought it would be like a pencil sharpener that you just stick the drill bit in, and
kind of is.
It kind of is.
Except it only does the really
so
the end.
So what sizes will it do, and what types of bits? I mean,
it'll do any round bit.
You know, like metal bits?
How about a wood bit, the big round wood drill bit?
A big round wood. It'll do any kind of round. That won't do the paddle bit.
It wouldn't do
a paddle bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, what would it do, two-inch bits?
Probably so. Probably it'll do a pretty good size bit. Now, let's see. I was thinking I've got a two-inch bit. I didn't try it. But, boy, 2-inch chuck's a big chuck.
It is. That's a big old
drill. I don't know that I've got a drill with a 2. And I think that big drill at John's that has handles on it's got maybe a 2-inch chuck. My drill press won't handle a 2-inch. Well, it might.
And how much did it cost?
I think $30.
So everybody ought to have one.
Well, if you got drill bits, you ought to have one. I buy cheap drill bits.
You could if you were going to sharpen them.
If you're going to I buy cheap drill bits. I've got a set of really, really good drill bits that are hidden from my brother-in-law.
Uh-huh.
That he doesn't know.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't even know I have.
Until he
does. I bought one time
show.
That are diamond drill bits, and these suckers, buddy boy, will drill a hole through a piece of sheet metal in a heartbeat.
Yeah,
But I buy, every time I go to the home show, every winter, I buy that little $20 set of, and my God, it's like 150.
Yeah, you get a bunch.
It's jillions of bits. Feasible, thinkable bits you could want is in there, and they're just cheap bits. But you use them one time, and they're dull, so you can. And yes, a blind person, to answer the question, yes, a blind person can use it, unless it's different. And anybody buys a drill doctor, write us and let us know how it works.
Talking about cheap bits, I think that works pretty good, except with the ones I bought trying to get through the concrete when I built the deck in the
concrete. Oh, man. Remember that?
Yeah, concrete would be tough on
them. I had 6 bits, and I bent every one of them, and I still haven't got a hole in that concrete.
I didn't have a drill. John Tatum finally went and bought a drill that just a chuck with a handle on. I mean, it isn't a drill. It isn't a pistol drill. It has a handle on each side that you hold.
A hammer drill.
Yes, and it isn't a hammer drill. It's just a big drill. And brother, it'll get it on. I don't know why he decided to buy it. Must have been on sale somewhere.
Only kidding, John.
Man.
Only kidding.
That drill with the handles, though, would be.
It may be a craftsman. Well, let me tell you one more story. I came home the other day, we came home Friday night, and I came out Saturday morning, and as I walked up on the building porch, I noticed that the air conditioner compressor was running, and I thought, oh, hell, they let the air conditioner run, because these boys like it cold. It's somebody else's electricity, so they just freeze you out. And I don't blame them, because all my Martin guitars were here. I don't care what they do. They drank every ounce of beer I had and called John Tatum and said, somebody's come rob Phil's house. All his beer's gone. Anyway, they're good kids, Brian and Bryce. I love them both to death. But what they had done is frozen the air conditioner. And the only thing I figure is they left the door open. And it one of the things air conditioners do, and I don't know exactly how they do it, the refrigeration man can let us know, they take moisture out of the air. That's one of the ways they cool your house, is by taking moisture out of the air. So if you leave the door open, they'll freeze up. Well, this thing had frozen solid and was moving no air, but the compressor is running. If that happens to you, turn it off. Don't let it run. Turn the compressor off, run the fan, and the fan will thaw out the coil eventually, and your air conditioner will be operating again, which is exactly what I did. But if you leave the door open and your air conditioner running, it'll freeze it up. And that's what these kids did. They didn't know that. They didn't have any idea. And once it quit cooling, they just turned it up more and figured, well, it's Phil's electricity. What the hell do we care?
So it was just sitting humming.
It was just sitting there humming. It wasn't blowing. It wasn't one speck of air coming out of that vent in the shop, and you know it'll blow your hat off.
Yeah. Wow.
Anyway, that's my two little stories, and we've done 56. Or
the electric company here loved that, didn't they? That little episode, man.
I don't want to hear about it. I'm out.
They're gonna.
All right. Thank man. You, guys. Thank you, Don Patterson.
Yes, sir. Enjoy
and you sure sounded good on your new microphone.
Oh, yeah, man. This is just temporary, I know.
You want me to? You want me to give Shaw that mic?
I want the gigantic one.
Best I've ever heard mic. Your dime.
I want the gigantic.
If I can figure out a way to put it on the stand, I'll give you that gigantic microphone.
Gigantic microphone.
Thank you, Shaw, boy. Appreciate
yeah,
you.
Yeah, good shot.
Tom Houston's here, and he ran the board for us. And thank you, Tom Houston.
Yes, sir.
And we'll see you again next week. Stay tuned for Blind Like Me. I think after this, we're going to do, I don't know who we're doing. I have no idea. What are we doing this week? This week I did... we're doing a cooking show with Dale Campbell.
Cooking show this
cooking
week.
Cooking show
coming
with
up
Dale
next.
Campbell. Hang on, we're going to make all kind of things as soon as we can get these damn hammers and saws out of here. We'll see you next week.
All right.
I see, said the blind man, as he picked up his hammer and saw.
The Blind Handyman is produced by Out of Market Productions, 1604 Southwood Drive, Lufkin, Texas. Phone 936-634-9500.